I'm your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, lordsofpain.net. Wherever you may be listening, Doc says.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the mania era is bringing terror on. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast, Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era, the book of sports entertainment and of the doctor's orders on lordsofpain.net. Doc says. Hello and welcome to the Doc Says here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, author of the WrestleMania era book series and longtime writer of the Doctor's Orders on lordsofpain.net. Wherever you may be listening, thank you for making me a part of your day. And I've got a special guest joining me this evening, and I'm glad to have him back. For reasons I'll explain momentarily, in particular, welcome back a good friend of the pod, Rich Latta.
What's going on, Chad? What's up, the Doc Says listeners? And I am glad to be here. This is my favorite show to guest on. We've been doing these for quite a while, and I always appreciate anytime I get the call to join.
Well, and it's an appropriate thing that you put it that way, because you have been my favorite guest to have on this show since we started co-podcasting together, 2016, I believe it was, for sure. I just don't remember when specifically. Maybe right
around. I remember having you on One Nation Radio and leading up to WrestleMania 31, so that would be at least 2015, actually.
Oh, wow, yeah. So, yeah, I guess it was quite a bit longer than that.
Yeah.
Wow. How about that? Time is flown by.
All that means is I'm better than Dave Fenichel, so that's all that really counts.
Someone tweet Dave Fenichel and let him know that was said. Well, it's a particular pleasure to have you on, man, because I'm going to go ahead and let everybody know at the beginning of the show so we can just have an awesome podcast and not have to leave it on a note of goodbye. This is actually going to be the final episode of The Doc Says, for real this time. I've gotten an opportunity to pursue something of a second career in academia, and it's something that I've wanted to do for a long time, and I've got an opportunity with it, and so that's going to be starting January 14th. So I've got a lot of prep work to do, and that's kind of where I see the hours I'd spent over these last several years, really this entire decade, writing about, talking about wrestling, is going to be dedicated toward that. So you may see me make a guest appearance, maybe on One Nation Radio if they'll have me, here and there, but in terms of me hosting a weekly podcast, I think this is pretty much going to be it, folks. So this is going to be a better way to go out than the way it was when I originally shut down the podcast in September 2018. I left then because, man, I don't know that I could have left on a lower note. I did not leave that podcast because I was ready to move on. I wasn't ready to move on at that point. But the product at that time in WWE just pushed me so far from my peak fandom that I just couldn't do it anymore. This year has been healing to my wrestling fandom. AEW has won the battle for my viewing habits in the upcoming year. I will be paying incredibly close attention to it and maybe occasionally doing some tweeting about it. But that's who won the contest, so to speak. But it's time to move on. But I've got a lot of stuff that I want to talk about. So bear with Rich and I, because we got a lot of stuff that I want to have for a great conversation to end the Doc Says run of dating back to 2013. It's been a decade spent really pouring myself into, as an escape, my wrestling passion. And that's where the books came from. And that's where a lot of awesome conversations with you, Rich Latta, came from. So it's a pleasure to have you on for that specific purpose, and as always.
Most appreciated, man.
So let's talk. Let's talk about the WrestleMania era, my friend. I wrote
a long time.
The original book, you know, I wrote the original book, and you and I have had a lot of conversations about it over the years. I wanted to write the equivalent of the book of basketball by Bill Simmons, which if you're an NBA fan and you like NBA history, it's like giving a kid candy. I mean, it's just something you that it's so easy to dive back into it, back in, because every time the NBA Finals or something huge in basketball happens, you go back and you put it within the context of that history book that goes back and really looks at basketball lore. That's what I wanted to do for the WrestleMania era that we've all grown up watching and that shaped for many of us the core of our wrestling fandom. But a lot has changed since 2013 in pro wrestling. This is not the same company that I wrote about so passionately back then. This is not a company whose decisions over the last several years have really lended many people to be included in a composition like that book. You know, there are certain exceptions. I think you and I can agree on that. But so much has changed about the industry, from WWE losing its monopoly on pro wrestling at large, when they had it right there, they had it full within their control to take firm command this decade and make themselves the unquestioned number one wrestling company that no one would ever potentially rival again. AEW is around, and AEW is trying to steal their market share, but there shouldn't have been an AEW, in my opinion. I mean, how, if WWE plays their cards right, do you think there's a W, do you think there's really an AEW in the here and now?
So now, playing their cards right for AEW not to exist would have taken a butterfly effect to go in reverse of so many different things. This goes back to like 2006. Like, you keep Kenny Omega from ever leaving and going to Japan in the first place. Like, that stops AEW. You signed the Young Bucks, you know, after their tryout, you know, that the match that they had with the Usos. Maybe you book Cody Rhodes a little better. But I think, so the point of this is something that our text conversation kind of alluded to. There was only going to be so much time that WWE was able to be on top like that, especially the way they were handling, you know, their booking. Combine that with the advances in technology, which WWE kind of spearheaded, you know, with the WWE Network. Once, you know, that gets out there, I'm like, oh, okay, like, smaller companies can start, you know, using the even playing field of the internet to start making stars. And what WWE had the advantage was the platform for all those years throughout last decade and this decade. It was like national television. That's the biggest thing. And then the internet became so important. You know, Chad, you were you at WrestleMania 20? Was it you were at? Or was that Fenichel?
Fenichel was at 20. I was at 22.
Okay. You were at 22. Fenichel was at 20. The internet community around wrestling and ways of watching things, it's massively different now than it was then. Would I be correct in saying that?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, like, I have New Japan Pro Wrestling at the tip of my fingers. I have, you can get a Ring of Honor subscription. You can load up RuTube, you know, for those of you like that will, you know, take a risk. And, you know, maybe you want to watch Dragon Gate or something like that. It's all at the tip of your fingers. And what happens, I think, you know, aside from WWE literally running people off with a lot of the booking, you know, going back to, you know, your fabulous work on the podcast you did last week in 2017 and 18, it broke a lot of people. And, you know, a lot of people were headed that way anyway. And kind of, you know, I remember when I first got into New Japan, that was like 2015. It was a couple weeks, ironically, before the 2015 Royal Rumble, which I always kind of felt like was the fork in the road, you know, of wrestling, you know, fans this decade, like whether you were going to start supporting the WWE and defending like what they're doing, or be just like, hey, this is wrong. Like, if you're going to stand on that side, which I kind of always have since then, like, what you guys did to Daniel Bryan was wrong. Like, it didn't make sense. Like, as far as everything that your book like lays out, how to become a star, how to, you know, have great matches, rivalries, moments. And, you know, you look at WrestleMania 30 happen, it's like, why wouldn't you want more of that? And for them to pivot I think it was inevitable for AEW to come up, and AEW just happened to be what formed. But this was happening all over the world. Once the playing field got evened, you know, so to say, with the internet, like, this was always going to happen. They were always going to be able to have new stars be made. And it's also been 20 years since they really took that hold. And that's a whole generation of great indie wrestlers that have come up that have had great wrestlers follow them. So it was about time, you know, something replenished here. And then, you know, the heavens opened up and the billionaire decided to go ahead and try to get on Turner.
And you know what, man? I mean, that makes all the sense in the world. That absolutely does. I think for me, partly what makes this conversation fascinating is that, I mean, you tell me what you think, but those butterfly effect items that you mentioned, things like Kenny Omega, you know, staying in WWE developmental, I mean, is it a giant leap? I mean, I know we're talking about a company that we've all come to think of as sort of for an audience of one and things of that nature, the well-documented sort of creative Tasmanian devil act that goes on behind the scenes so frequently where it's just blah, 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 it's all over the place. The butterfly effect items you're talking about, though, is it too far of a leap to think realistically that a company that was really cognizant of where the industry was trying to go, that was listening to the audience, that was paying attention to trends and trying to be innovative? Like, look at this decade in the NBA and all the things they're trying to do, constantly trying to make the product better, trying to go with the flow of the style that wants to be played, to try to make technology and everything so accessible, to try to expand their brand. You know, these are things that WWE knows how to do. But if they had people behind the scenes that were listened to, is it really that big of a stretch to think that WWE cultivates an environment in the mid-2000s where you can kind of see that a guy like CM Punk's going to go up in 2006 and become a star? You know, I mean, is it really that big of a stretch of the imagination to just let pro wrestlers do what makes them great pro wrestlers? So Kenny Omega then doesn't leave? He doesn't become Kenny Omega if he doesn't leave. But
and I think there would have been someone else that would have been what Kenny Omega is. Like, had, you know, Kenny just stayed and, you know, eventually been Dolph Ziggler. But,
okay, gotcha.
Like, so, and it's not so much necessarily like, oh, if Kenny stays, you know, that's what Kenny is like. The idea of Kenny and what happened with him,
gotcha,
could have been prevented, I feel like.
Gotcha. But you take that type of example and you change that little piece of history, and not drastically. You go and you look at certain things like the booking of a guy like Cody Rhodes, the general booking philosophy that dominated a lot of the periods that led up to 27 and 18 breaking people, the way that the championships are used in the mid-card, tag team wrestling in general, the reluctance to get on board with the women's revolution until later on, the talent recruitment strategy being trying to find a whole bunch of guys like Chris Masters instead of guys like CM Punk, you know, finding guys like Baron Corbin instead of finding someone on the independents like a Samoa Joe. You know, that sort of thought process, that doesn't have to happen. And I guess that's kind of my point, is that if WWE does the innovative sort of things with its style, goes with the flow, you know, figures out the same kind of formula that they did, but didn't do it so frequently at the expense of guys that really were a lost generation of potential headlining stars, as I've used the phrase before, the lost generation, yeah, that of guys that never were able to really get a shot at making it with a consistent creative push behind them. A guy like Dolph Ziggler fits that bill very well. So too, in many ways, does The Miz. There's a lot of guys like that that came through the system that didn't really get the chance to move their way up and to maximize their talents. If you have an environment that's not like that, then it's not just that AEW exists to me. It's that AEW can exist and occupy such a space within the social consciousness of pro wrestling. You know, the NFL has got suitors trying to create these new leagues because football is so popular.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going out there and readily giving up Aaron Rodgers to that new league.
Yeah.
I don't think WWE ends up having the same kind of budding rival that's taken seriously by a lot of people as a budding rival if WWE doesn't make so many mistakes. And so I feel like that's one of those things that, you know, if you look at the butterfly effect, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if we had New Japan and we had AEW and we had these companies that were getting more shine and having more opportunities. But I don't think that if WWE doesn't make a few, you know, several, but all avoidable, certain decisions, that maybe they would have put themselves in a position to where we're not having the same kind of conversation right now. Because it's that conversation that I look back at the WrestleMania era book and think to myself, man, if I tried to write this now, I'm not even sure how I would do it, because it just seems like we're now 5 years removed from the development of someone who would be in the conversation with the people listed in the top 25 of that book. And that mm-hmm. doesn't seem right. 7 years is like, it's not quite dog
years, so long,
but it's a long ass time in pro wrestling lore. So how can that be? I mean, you talk about Daniel Bryan, great example. I mean, in a different world, Daniel Bryan is pushing like hell right now for a top 20 spot in that all-time list. But who are you going to take him? Who's he going to take the place of at this rate, given the fact that his opportunities to layer his resume on the WWE stage just haven't been there? So that's part of where it dovetails, is now you're going to have a whole different conversation. Like, well, what's Chris Jericho going to be able to be remembered as historically, if he's able to do something significant with AEW? Like, you could make the argument that he already has. What's AEW going to afford Jon Moxley the opportunity to do that he could have just as easily done in a different few set of circumstances being different, he could have done in WWE, and the narrative on his career is completely different. So it's
crazy.
It's crazy.
Because today, I actually, James had, my co-host on One Nation Radio, he had sent me a message about an episode we did in February where we apparently did an 11-minute segment clowning Jeff Jarrett or something like that, right? But on that same episode, it was, what is Dean Ambrose's legacy? You know, Dean Ambrose, essentially, in it, and we referenced your book, where he was, and he was in the 60s and all that. And as you're mentioning now, all AEW's done is give him a chance to start trying to break towards the 50s and 40s and 30s. Who knows? Like, and Jericho, you know, why is the top 10 off limits now for Jericho?
That's a great point. I mean, and let's bring back to the forefront now the conversation you and I originally started talking about having in our Facebook chat leading up to this podcast for the last several weeks. And, you know, you brought up, we should look, if we're going to have this conversation, then we should look at Roman Reigns versus Daniel Bryan at Fastlane 2015. Because it's, you know, you talk about the Rumble that year being the fork in the road. This was an extension of that fork in the road. Because this was WWE's opportunity to say, you know what, given the reaction at Royal Rumble, you know, much like last year, this is just a guy that the people don't want to give up on yet. This makes sense. Let's put him in the main event. Let's go ahead and do it. Everything else can happen just as it happened. Seth Rollins can cash in at the end of the night, and he can steal it, and he'd be remembered that much better for it, because he's stealing it from someone who we all really, really, really wanted to have his moment again. Right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. I'm going to give the floor to you. Set the stage for this match and what you feel it means to where we're at in wrestling today.
So this match, you know, leading up to it, as Chad mentioned, the 2015 Royal Rumble, which I kind of felt like was the fork in the road after, two ways the fan base kind of, like, you know, turned on itself, essentially. Like, there are people that always have kind of held, you know, what they did to Daniel Bryan, you know, held that type of resentment. And then there's, like, you know, folks that, you know, what I would say would defend WWE, you know, under, like, all costs. Like, I'm like, you can look at all these things. And what this match represents is, this is the only match of these two's, like, main event runs, right? Against each other. Yet, they are the two defining wrestlers in WWE this decade, I feel like. Even more than Cena, because like Cena was, you know, I mean, Cena's different. Let's just take Cena out of it for the sake of this discussion.
Fair enough. That makes sense.
What Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns are is like the guy that the fans picked versus the guy the company picked. And once they picked him, eventually, after Fastlane 2015, like we never got that same feeling back with Daniel Bryan. Like, we love him. We were glad when he was able to unretire and everything like that. But we've had to watch, like, the route that they took is what we eventually got, you know, going back from, you know, January 2015, February 2015 with Fastlane. And then I always wonder, what if, like, you know, they were just like, you know what, we're going to do Bryan and Brock at WrestleMania 31. And then remember, they shunted Daniel Bryan down to the ladder match. Yep. And then he becomes Intercontinental Champion. And all of a sudden he gets his head kicked off by Sheamus. And it's like, butterfly effect, like just that itself, he might not be literally in the match at that time, you know, maybe against injured, maybe not, who cares. But I think that Bryan and Reigns, like, and it was crazy when they started coming together this summer, right? And yeah. I was like, what are they doing here? They started a few really late, you know. I've always thought that Reigns as a heel against Bryan, you know, and eventually putting him over at WrestleMania would always be the way to kind of fix that, what I would say, like, is a cut in time, essentially. That would be the way to reverse that and really get people to lighten up on Roman Reigns, because Roman Reigns, for all, you know, that he's been through in and out of the ring since, you know, the Shield broke up, he hasn't deserved a lot of it. He's put some of it on himself with some of the comments that he's made, but he's gotten a lot of shit from people. And he got it partly because of Fastlane 2015, where it was like he wrestled good enough, but most people know what it was. That was his first real pay-per-view match as a single, or second pay-per-view match as a single, if I'm not mistaken. And then they were like, hold on, you're going to just shove this guy out the way? And I think these two guys have defined the decade, even with Bryan being out of the ring, Roman Reigns going, you know, WrestleMania main event after WrestleMania main event after WrestleMania main event. And every, you know, time leading up to that main event, it's like that same feeling that we got starting in 2015, no matter what happens, because I don't know about you, Chad, but I kind of looked, and I don't know if this necessarily is like a way to look at this anymore, but the WrestleMania main event is like the NBA Finals. Like, if someone makes the finals, like, okay, you know, this is the elite stage. And after a while, it was like, wow, they just picked dudes for this thing. Like, and, you know, it was slow. It used to be the WWE Championship. Oh, they won the WWE Championship before. Then eventually the title got bastardized to that degree. And if they decided to then bastardize the WrestleMania main event, it's like, well, what do we really have to really measure history and greatness and who should really be here? Because it just felt like they picked this guy. And I think that's the legacy of Roman Reigns so far. And it sucks for him because the fans are always going to kind of, you know, have those four WrestleManias looking at him like, why did this happen? I feel like we're going to have to explain this, like, to people in years. And that's why it's important for, you know, shows like The Doc Says to exist, like One Nation Radio. It's like, because we're going to look at this stuff and be like, does this make sense at all? Like, for what happened throughout history? Or could they literally have plugged anybody else in Roman Reigns' place? Because I feel like they could have. And I think I saw you send a tweet out that you were going to rebook WrestleMania 32 through 35, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That is right.
So just for me, like, if you put Daniel Bryan in that first one right there, WrestleMania 31's saved. WrestleMania 32, you put Dean Ambrose in there to challenge, saved. WrestleMania 33, John Cena versus AJ Styles, run it. In 2018, maybe that's Roman Reigns' chance to get back there. Maybe that's his first real shot to get back there.
Maybe.
Or, you know, so I don't know, man. And I think, you know, what Bryan and Reigns are, they eventually have to settle this at WrestleMania. And when I say settle this, like, there's a way they can fix it. and then there's a way that can just bring up all those old feelings. And I'd be interested to hear like what you think of the Brian Reigns dynamic, because for me, it's really defined one side of the fandom versus another.
Oh man, there's so many amazing things that you just said there. That is that's a fascinating series of things to unpack. I think it's hard to disagree with you on that point, that these two guys define the decade, because I think what I discovered in doing that decade in review series is that the first half of the decade really peaked in its momentum that it built in the memories we've created about wrestling through the WWE medium in the 2010s. It peaked with Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30 leading up to that. Just all of the energy that we poured into it, all due respect to CM Punk and what he was able to do. But Daniel Bryan, to me, is in the classic analogy that has come to the forefront in the last 20 years. Daniel Bryan is Steve Austin, and CM Punk is The Rock. So, you know, Daniel Bryan being the chosen one versus the dichotomy that's developed in the second half of the decade with so much apathy just building and building and building, because as you and I have talked about on this podcast, I think, you know, I was certainly of the opinion that you talk about John Cena being somewhat of an other. I thought John Cena was a one-time thing. You know, I'd long looked at John Cena's run and saw a lot of parallels to the 1997 Bret Hart character, where to a certain part of the fan base, he was one thing, and to a certain part of the fan base, he was another. WWE was okay with that. They just took that on a more sort of a macro level with the WWE audience at week to week, you know, all throughout the United States, all over the world. Same dichotomy. John Cena's loved by these people and disliked by these people. You know, Roman Reigns trying to duplicate that was always a mistake. The fact that they tried to recreate the John Cena formula, which is always personally what I felt that they did. I don't know how you feel about that, but personally that's my opinion on why Roman Reigns was pushed the way he was pushed, because they felt like they could recreate that dynamic. And it was never going to work because Roman Reigns doesn't have that kind of charisma. But because of all of those things that happened with Roman Reigns, he is the poster child for alienating the diehard fan base. Daniel Bryan is the poster child of what happens when you don't. And so now we sit in this era where the product's become so homogenized. WrestleMania doesn't look like it used to. That's what that podcast about rebooking WrestleMania was all about, is let's take the same formula that they had used in years past and let's move it into the modern time, make a few tweaks that are very realistic. We're still going to have WrestleManias with 80,000 people in attendance. We're still going to have network subscriptions through the roof and consistent at 1.7 million. There's not going to be any real change, but WrestleMania still gets to be WrestleMania. Oh, man. That part about if you take away the WrestleMania main event and what it meant, if you take away the championship as the narrative drive leading into WrestleMania that it used to be, and you devalue it, and you make that a secondary thing to part-time talent coming back for the latest legacy moment, if you take that away, what is wrestling in WWE? How do we define it? How do we define the year-to-year calendar? Is everything the same now? Are we not supposed to value WrestleMania over everything else like before? WrestleMania is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It used to be something that every year I'd get excited about in December, and then I would talk about it like crazy until I couldn't talk about it anymore the week leading up to it, and then we'd have all the different fun things to discuss, like Daniel Bryan versus The Authority in 2014, and what could have been with Daniel Bryan against Brock Lesnar in 2015. I mean, imagine the way the audience reacts. Imagine the way that Brock versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 31 is remembered today if it had actually happened. And what kind of how that sets up through the rest of the decade. It's a butterfly effect with an amazing impact, an undefinable impact, one that completely changes the legacy conversations from here on, because right now we're entering a world, Rich Latta, where I don't see anything in the near future entering into the legacy kind of conversation on a level of what somebody like, I was thinking earlier about Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle didn't have an extraordinarily long WWE career, but if you look at what he accomplished and what he accomplished consistently at big shows in WWE, is there anybody that's anywhere close to Kurt Angle in their overall body of work in WWE? And are they going to even be able to get there? Are people going to look back at the body of work that someone like Seth Rollins has put together and say that guy's on Kurt Angle's level? I mean, it's possible, but I mean, I'm a huge Seth Rollins supporter, but I can't look into the crystal ball anymore and predict how we're going to have these conversations 5 years from now, because 5 years ago,
the same parameters don't exist.
What's that?
Like the same parameters don't exist. And you know, you combine that, the erratic booking to put it nicely, with the overexposure. And it's like, and with the fact that, you know, you're going to see comparable or better wrestling all around the world right now. So it kind of brings WWE's place into question, you know, when it feels like they'd rather everything be homogenous, as you mentioned, and it's like they've gotten so big, you know, and so financially insulated, it's taken away, you know, how the fan is, you know, going to impact the wrestling. Like the fans are just window dressing to fill time for networks essentially now. So, you know, you're looking for legacy defining stuff. You know, I can't say the WWE Championship feels like the IWGP Championship right now. No, like I feel like that's the Champions League of wrestling. I've called it that before, and it's like, you know, if you're an IWGP title match, you're looking at, you know, it's history either way, just being in one. Now, you look at someone challenging for the WWE title, and it's like, look at the AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura feud from 2018. It's like, you know, and then you look at Jinder Mahal, like, just get shot to the title. There's just so many things, like, that they're the way they've devalued stuff over time, it makes it really hard to invest in this stuff. And guys coming up through the ranks now, like the Velveteen Dream, for example, is he going to, and I say this knowing the answer, it's like, is he going to spend his career in NXT now? Like, what's the goal for a lot of these guys? And it's not even the guys, it's WWE having so many people under contract. It's like stuffing something into a garbage can, right? And you keep putting stuff in it, and you keep putting stuff in it. Like, and by putting stuff, signing more wrestlers, creating more sub-brands, and all this stuff, and eventually it's going to overflow, because, and that's what I feel like happened with a Jon Moxley. He fell out of the trash can that all these guys were in, because there just wasn't any space for him anymore. And it's like a belt, you know, a belt buckle busts, and you know, you've gained too much weight, essentially, and eventually that weight needs to find a way to get out. And that's why we've seen all these wrestlers throughout 2019 ask for their release, coming on Twitter with their, you know, they're thankful for everything that, you know, has happened, but they're requesting their release. I feel like every wrestler was saying the same thing, and it's all code for the same stuff that Moxley told us on the Chris Jericho podcast. This is the feeling that exists with the fans, and it exists with the wrestlers. There's only so many sub-brands they're going to create to where it's like, okay, this is Purple Raw. This is Yellow SmackDown over here. This is the UK version, but it's all the same thing. It's all a big umbrella that if you're not excited about other avenues like New Japan, like AEW, like, you know, if you like Lucha Libre, if you like Ring of Honor, all these things need to work in conjunction. Like, it's a Rubik's Cube. If one side you start figuring it out, you gotta, you know, twist the other side here. WWE is the leader of the industry, for better or for worse, you know, for whatever we may say about it, but it's their fault. Yeah. For literally everything. It's their fault.
I want to throw something at you real quick. I'd be curious to get your take. in this conversation of legacy, another guy whose name came up, and I want to talk about him first specific to WWE, is Chris Jericho. Like, Chris Jericho had a great WWE career. No question about it. I've referred to him in my texts as he's the Kobe Bryant of pro wrestling to Shawn Michaels' Michael Jordan. Now, he might be working his way out of that status and basically ditching the label. But WWE-wise, I mean, this is a guy who, if you look at some of what he did at WrestleMania, for instance, he was in the main event. He had a great match, one of the all-time great WrestleMania matches, aesthetically anyway, with Chris Jericho, or excuse me, with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 19.
Mm-hmm.
I think very highly of the match that he had with Christian at WrestleMania 20. In the first and, to many, still the best Money in the Bank ladder match that took place at WrestleMania. You know, goes on to have a solid match for the world title at WrestleMania with Edge. Has a very good match with CM Punk at WrestleMania. You go back and you look at his SummerSlam exploits, some of the things he did there, some of the things he did at the Rumble, like the match that he had with The Rock, his performance in 2003, his performance in 2013, and so on and so forth. That's a heck of a resume, right? So,
yeah.
Tell me what it's
a big resume.
It is. It's a big resume. Tell me what you think would need to happen for someone who's on the roster right now, working their career resume up the hierarchical ladder. What do you think it would take for someone today to catch someone like Chris Jericho? Because to me, I'll preface by saying, I feel like there's only one guy right now who has a realistic shot at it and who is also anywhere close to being in the same stratosphere. And I've said it a lot. I think Seth Rollins is dating back these last 7 years, the most decorated roster member across that time period. Maybe doesn't have the big baby face moment per se. Doesn't have that moment, but he sure as hell has the heel moment, and he's got the overall resume to support it. Always been the kind of guy that pushed well, but to me, he's nowhere close to being in the conversation.
Yeah,
and won't be for I don't know how long, because I don't know if he'll get the chance.
And I think what happens with Rollins, if you look at his headlining career, right? SummerSlam 2018 was the first time he main evented a Big Four as an advertised person. It took until 2018 for this to happen. And this is a guy that's been pushed, that has been won every belt, you know, as much as the titles mean nothing, you know, like we say, but he's been consistently focused on ad storylines, you know, big turns, big moments, stuff like that. This is the first time, Chad, he ever main evented as an advertised person,
and
like closed the show.
I'm going to go you one better. You said 2018. And I feel it's relevant to point out it was
2019. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's what I meant. 2019. I'm sorry.
That's
yeah.
another full year yeah. into a five-year
yeah.
headlining career. Year five.
Yeah. So
summer
yeah,
of
even that. It's like Chris Jericho came in August of 1999. You know, he was beating The Rock in Austin 2 years later. Like, it's like, to unify the titles, like, you know, is, you know, I think you got to look at someone like a Daniel Bryan, and then, you know, imagine if it's a fresh guy, like, say if it's a, you know, I'm trying to think of someone that's like a 27-year-old guy, but they don't have a lot of those, but I would say, like, now, I think you have to have an NXT legacy now, to some extent. Like, if you look at, like, an Adam Cole, like, if he gets the opportunity to be pushed on the main roster. And I feel like Cole is among, like, that class of that we had in NXT a couple years ago, where it was like, yo, this is WWE's, like, this is their crop to compete with the rest of the world, it feels like. And I'm talking about Gargano, Ciampa, Ricochet, Aleister Black, Velveteen Dream, and who the hell was I talking about? Who did I start with this thing with?
How about Andrade? So you fall into that class?
Andrade, yeah. I would throw him in there too. Like, they have, oh, that's what makes it so frustrating. They have the guys to do it, but I think you would have to have like an Adam Cole. That's what I was talking about. You would have to have that piece of your resume now, because you know they place, you know, varying emphasis on what NXT means and what it doesn't mean, you know, and that's a thing that I've struggled with, because I was always trying to figure out, okay, what exactly is NXT? Where, you know, when someone like a Lars Sullivan would get like shotgun like up the ladder, would never really challenge him or anything. Someone like Lacey Evans, I'm like, well, why aren't these people having to go on TakeOver and do all this stuff?
Yeah.
And then once I started seeing it as like the WWE keep away distraction league from the rest of the world, and I felt like this, you know, probably like spring of 2018, I started talking about it openly and not really liking, you know, the vibe of it. It's like, yo, let these dudes go make the money. Let them, you know, do all this stuff, or like let them have a career that means something, because I feel like I know what it looks like at the end of the movie with them. Like what Ricochet is turned into right now is sad. Like it's, I'm sure he's well taken care of. His bank account feels nice. He owes nothing to us, right?
True.
And you know, us as fans and everything like that. So people, please don't try me with something like that. But when we're talking about someone and we want to evaluate them, what based on what they've done elsewhere, based on what the potential is, based on history, what they have him doing does not bode well for him, like right now. So
what kind of legacy is he going to be in a position to leave doing what he's doing and with the trajectory of where he's going?
He's a spoke on the wheel.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's another, I want to go back to the comment you made again about the WrestleMania main event in particular. You know, what's driving someone in this day and age to get to that spot? Because wasn't the whole point before, isn't a part of Chris Jericho's legacy, using him to continue the example, isn't a part of the conversation about Chris Jericho is that he got to the WrestleMania main event and it failed? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that matter? Like, isn't, like, if we talk about Karl Malone in the NBA Finals in the late 90s, part of the thing that makes it a fascinating conversation is because we wanted to see what he would do when he got there. And what did he do when he got there? He choked. And that becomes a part of his legacy. Now, I mean, that's no offense to Karl Malone. He's still one of the greatest power forwards to ever play the game. But if we're going to have a conversation sitting around the fire pit, shooting the shit about pro wrestling the way that we would pro basketball or any other really sport or entertainment medium, the thing I miss most about the WrestleMania main event is it used to be a place where you felt like, if this person doesn't get it right here, their career is over. Their career is taking a giant step back. Chris Jericho rebounded well at WrestleMania 19, and partly what made it such a nice story for him is because, you know, the previous year, he had the show stolen out from under him in the main event. And a year later, he's the guy stealing the show out from underneath the main events. That matters.
Right.
Where are these guys going to get that opportunity in the here and now? Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan stands alone in the past 4 years as the match that belongs in the conversation amongst the greatest ever in WWE. And at WrestleMania, for 4 years to go by and there just be one, there's something wrong with that, in my opinion. And so, you know, and that, I'm talking about the complete experience. I'm not talking about a match that, and God bless it because I love it, but Rollins versus Triple H at WrestleMania 33, which I love. I think it's a brilliant piece of performance art in pro wrestling. But part of the experience of a WrestleMania classic is when that crowd is going crazy, when that crowd knows that this is the biggest thing that these two guys are going to do all year. And this is their moment, this is their spot, this is their chance. Like Chris Jericho himself once said, this is the chance to live forever. And you don't get that chance anymore. You stumble upon it like we did.
Without really rare circumstances. And usually WWE's like kicking and screaming, you know, being forced into it. And a lot of that stuff, it's crazy. Like Kofi Kingston is like, he's a very touchy subject right now for me, Because it's like, well,
he should be.
Yeah. And it's like, I look at everything that he did leading up to WrestleMania and how excellent it was, how awesome it was, how career defining it was, and then look at what they immediately started having him do after. And it's not the same. They never believed in him. They gave him opponents that he wrestled 10 years ago or that are like older in that age. There's no like kind of fresh dangers or challenges or anything like that. And I felt like it was one of those lame duck world title reigns that just kind of they did until it was time to go on Fox and then, you know, move him out the way, put a tag belt on him so no one gets mad. But I've watched this stuff long enough to know exactly what happened to Kofi Kingston.
You know,
that's before you get into like, you know, me being a black man watching that. That's before you get he could be white as the snow on the ground, you know. So, like I know what happened with Kofi Kingston. Like this is the Rey Mysterio, this is the extended Eddie Guerrero. Like
I don't think there's much question about that. And of course, you know, I'm thrilled for him on one hand because I'm so happy that he got the opportunity to have a legacy moment, you know, that no one will ever be able to take that away from him. No one will ever be able to extract that from a conversation about what made 2019 in WWE. I mean, those conversation pieces matter to a wrestler's career. I don't even care if they try to pretend like it doesn't, because I think we are entering into a world, the internet era, call it what you will, we can do this about pro wrestling. We can have intelligent conversations about wrestling legacy. And the further that remains the case, the more the people involved in the legacy-making matches and moments are going to have interest in hearing those conversations, even if they wouldn't admit it. I genuinely believe that, because you're not going to sit here and tell me that Kevin Garnett isn't curious to know where he ranks in many people's minds amongst the greatest power forwards of all time. You're not going to be able to convince me that it doesn't matter to him how people relate him to Karl Malone, you know, how people relate him to Dirk Nowitzki, etc. You'd have a hard time convincing me otherwise. Now, that being said,
like, these people don't work that hard to get that good at what they do and, you know, being the physical marvels that they are for them just to for the check to heal everything. Like, the check doesn't heal everything. Deep down inside, these guys have pride. I feel like they are underappreciated, you know, in, you know, the world of sport at large. Like, it's like, honestly, what is really professional wrestling mean in society? But to fans, like, who want to contextualize this stuff, like, the check's not enough. And I know they know it's not enough because they wouldn't snap as hard back on Twitter as they do at people if this didn't bother them.
Oh, man. I love the direction that this conversation took, because that's a really interesting thing to discuss, is the WrestleMania main event. I mean, that was what the podcast that I did about rebooking WrestleManias was all about, is just kind of expressing the fact that I think one of the most unfortunate things that I can say about where WWE is right now, as I'm on my way out of the podcasting game, is, dude, what did you do to the yearly event that renewed my wrestling fandom every year? What did you do? You know, I mean, it was so easy for me to get wrapped up in it. It was there's really nothing like getting wrapped up in WrestleMania season and it producing one of those Daniel Bryan type things, or even Rock versus John Cena. I mean, those are totally different emotions that those types of situations conjure up, but, you know, I mean, I bought a big screen TV for The Rock versus John Cena. I bought my first flat screen TV because of that match. I was like, I got to get a flat screen TV to see that. I got to be one of those big ass TVs for that specific thing. I mean, yeah. I can't say that I can imagine myself anytime soon feeling like that about a match at WrestleMania. I can't think of what it would be at this point. And I think that sucks. And I hope in the coming years that WrestleMania will find what made it magic again. As I said in that podcast, WrestleMania isn't about moments. It's about the things that cause them to happen so that they become moments. And if you don't have that, then you have It's a you know, it's oh man.
You have a sterilized WrestleMania. It says WrestleMania, but like when you open up the door behind, like where it says WrestleMania, it's just like it's a show there that's in a stadium. Like like WrestleMania used to be in basketball arenas back then, right? But you know, I know what WrestleMania 14 felt like.
Yeah.
I know what WrestleMania 15 felt like. I know what WrestleMania 28 felt like. And you know, the feeling around it, like the aesthetics can be what the aesthetics are. I'm not even saying like, you know, it needs to be a certain way. It's a spirit that I feel like that they've kind of, I don't want to say sold out, but what they've done is tried to live on yesteryear, on the reputations of old stars, appeal it way too much to people that obviously don't care about it, that their fans don't care about, the selling out for quote-unquote mainstream attention and all this other stuff. And it's like, eventually they, like the women's main event this year, for example.
Oh, God.
By the time it came, I strongly felt like Bryan and Kofi Kingston was the hottest match.
Oh, yeah.
And
no doubt.
It was like there was no reason for Charlotte to be there. And it was like, well, they're putting this her in there so they could forever say she was in a WrestleMania main event and they're never going to do it again. Like, so this is why she had to be there. Going away from, if you look at the day after the Royal Rumble, Ronda and Becky was every great money-drawing feud segment, you know, every big one you've ever seen. That was the feeling right there. And then when they went away from it, I'm like, okay, they've decided it's something different. Like that, they fundamentally have decided WrestleMania is something different. You know, and you can trace that WrestleMania 34, WrestleMania 33, when, you know, the like when AJ Styles is the MVP of WWE all throughout 2016 and he's stuck wrestling Shane McMahon in the opening match. You can't tell me AJ Styles was happy about that. I'm sure he probably loved the paycheck. I'm sure he probably loved, you know, getting done early, you know, going back to the hotel room, preparing for the WrestleMania party, things of that nature. But you're telling me that that guy at that time with his physical gifts, he didn't get a WrestleMania main event, and he should have. Like, so, like, when these things start happening, like, you start going down the line, like, okay, this person never really got their WrestleMania time. This person never really, like, we never really got that. And I think a step for them to go in that right direction would be looking at Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns this year and playing into the reality of the last 5 years. Like, Daniel Bryan, like, when you were main event all those WrestleManias, the people wanted me in every single one of them. Oh, man, I could write, like, a damn good one for Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. Like, that's the WrestleMania main event that I want.
You know what?
I don't know if we'll ever get it, though.
You know, and there's obviously there's a great story to be told there. Everything you just said, that was perfect. I mean, an analogy came to mind for me that fits both what you mentioned about Ronda Rousey versus Becky with the addition of Charlotte unnecessarily. It fits the theme of just the general tone of what WrestleMania should be. WrestleMania to me, I'm sitting here in my man cave and I have a signed Tim Duncan basketball. And underneath it sits a Tim Duncan rookie card. All right? I used to feel about WrestleMania like if I walked into your house and you had a pair of Michael Jordan signed Air Jordans that had never been worn, I'd be absolutely blown away by that. If you just show me a pair of basketball shoes, or if I just show you a random basketball with a Tim Duncan card from 2005, sitting underneath it, your reaction to it is completely different. My reaction to it is completely different because though they are very, very similar things that look the same, brother, it's just not the same. It's just not the same. And I think about Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns right now. If you have that match, I mean, sure, that's a good story to tell. But, you know, doesn't that almost feel like, and maybe, I think if it happened, maybe I'd change my mind. But doesn't it at least feel like on paper that there was a time to do that? And that time is over.
I feel like it should have happened. Like,
should have happened already.
It should have been in Yeah, it should have been WrestleMania 35. You know, they should have been putting those wheels in motion the second Daniel Bryan got cleared. You know, because the reason Roman Reigns never got accepted is because of Daniel Bryan. How do you not go there?
Yeah.
How do you not do a Shield triple threat as the main event of one of these WrestleManias? Maybe you do that at WrestleMania 34. You know, had you know, Moxley Ambrose not been injured.
Yeah.
Maybe you put the wheels in motion for that. Like. And that's another one. Like, yeah, there was never a Shield main event. Like, but we did it at Battleground. No, check it out on the WWE Network.
Oh my god, that's definitely one of the ones for me that the fact that that didn't happen has changed my perception of what WWE is. I will readily admit. I mean, I felt like that was three of their guys. They'd cultivated. They'd brought through the system successfully, and all three of them branched out and had very good careers. WrestleMania 33 is the only one where they were all healthy. I still say, as I said on the podcast about the WrestleManias, rebooking them, it should have been Reigns was the champion, Rollins was the Rumble winner, Ambrose was Mr. Money in the Bank. WrestleMania main event in 2017, boom. But I digress. So another thing that I wanted to say about the WrestleMania dynamic real quick is... Man, I just feel like at this point in time, at this stage of WrestleMania lore, that, oh man, I just don't know that you can get it back now. You know, I mean, because what WrestleMania was, there has to be a conscious recognition of what it used to be, being different from what it is. And until someone within the position of power recognizes that, how many years go by with more of the same? Because it doesn't seem like we're any closer to some sort of solution. I mean, Bryan versus Kofi Kingston very much feels like an exception to what's going to continue to be the rule. But that's what, to me, still, if they can find their way back there, that's still what makes WrestleMania something different that no one else can equal. You know? I mean, New Japan can do some great, great things. I don't know that... Can New Japan... Can they do a Daniel Bryan versus the Authority in the WrestleMania main event and it resonate on that level? Can they do that? I mean, can they do that and the conversation between you and I be legitimate that they can do that? I don't know that they can. And that's the thing about AEW. It's like AEW's got to find a way at some point to tap into that, because that is – they've got all this visceral us versus them stuff going for them in AEW. I don't know how they're going to make a WrestleMania. You know, WrestleMania is this thing that WWE, if they don't – continue to throw it away, they've still got this thing that's just like a celebration of life is one of the things that was in one of the taglines, I think, at WrestleMania 15. I think it was Classy Freddy Blassie. It's a celebration of life at the end of his little video tribute, making them all look like Greek gods in that video, the intro video. That's what WrestleMania was. With what it is, I can see passion for it decreasing. You know, crowds continually apathetic by night's end after a very long show. Until WWE fixes that, then, you know, I mean, AEW, I can't see them having something that connects on that big of a level where you're filling a football stadium. And not only that, but you've got a match that everybody in the world just can't wait to see on this completely emotionally engaged level that I don't have yet for AEW. I love it, and it's my chosen route for the next year probably. But... God bless it, man. I mean, I can't see myself getting that wrapped up in it. It might be better. It might be a better product. But when WWE gets it right, man, and they get it right on the WrestleMania stage, they're hard to touch. How do you duplicate Rock versus Cena in any other medium? You don't even get to see it in basketball very often. You don't get to see the best versus the best in the NBA finals all the time. It's a rare thing that happens. So, I don't know. If you've got any response to that, go for it. Then we'll move on.
See, the only thing, like, I think New Japan does it a completely different way. Like, they do it for the wrestling fan. Like, if you're looking for, like this year, like, it looks like Naito is going to be, you know, he's got two matches to win to finally be the double champion, finally win, you know, the title that all his fans have wanted, you know, him to win. I'm not personally as much into that story. I'm, you know, more of a fan of Ibushi and, you know, Okada, but, a lot of people are gonna be celebrating, you know, this, and he's gonna have hell to get through those two matches, guys that have tormented him. But it's a different feeling. Like, you know, when Kenny won the IWGP title, it was like he climbed this unclimbable mountain. Like, if someone finally beat Okada, the greatest champion I've ever seen, having their greatest match with his greatest challenger on the greatest night, whatever. Yeah. But it's still like a different thing, though. That's like, and it's different because, like, WWE has pushed me away to seek different.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think I'll ever love WWE the way I did, you know, at one point. And I'm cool with that. I'm resigned to that, you know. And, you know, I'm a huge AEW guy. Like, I love, like, what they're doing. I was a huge fan of the Elite. Why would I not support them? So, that whole thing there, like, you know, if they've got to just start putting time under their belt, maybe they'll get that thing, you know, that's there. And maybe it's the first time Kenny wins AEW title. Maybe it's whenever Cody finds his way to undo a stipulation one day. Maybe it's something. I feel like they're just casting lines out there, and then one thing that, you know, gives me encouragement about them is look at their young guys. They're under 30 crop and how they're taking care of these guys and starting to cultivate them and have them ready for, you know, say the day comes when, you know, Kenny Omega's 42 years old or something like that. And, you know, he's not what he was, you know, something like that. But we've got Darby Allin. We've got Sammy Guevara here. We've got all these guys that we've started investing in from the beginning to start, you know, rolling this over. But in WWE's case, I think eventually, because, like, the signs are there. NXT is incredibly, you know, well booked for the most part. There are things that, you know, I often roll my eyes at, like their, you know, misuse of Keith Lee for one. But, you know, like, it's there. There are a lot of smart people that work for that company, but there's only one of them that's going to decide when this happens. And so he's out the way. That's when I would count on WWE, like, dramatically getting either different or better. It's going to be one of the two.
The way I've come to look at it, just in you and I talking, I mean, this is a fresh analogy that's just sprung to mind while you and I have been talking about the change in how we look at Legacy and WrestleMania and all these things, and now transitioning to AEW. I think AEW has the potential, this way I look at it right now, AEW has the potential to mean to me what a show like Game of Thrones means to people. Because it's really good, and you watch it week to week, and you get something out of it, and you just, you know, you kind of keep this very creative understanding of what wrestling can be in mind, and you're appreciating it more so as a fan of someone who really appreciates good television, and in this case, good wrestling on television. WWE has the potential to be more like the experience that I had with the Avengers series over the past couple of years, where you're talking about just something epic, and so epic that it makes that there's no comparison in terms of worldwide box office experience when you're a part of something like what it was to be a part of the Avengers Infinity War and to see everyone just like gasp when they did the snap at the end of that experience that they produced and how visually stunning it was. WWE, and I think WrestleMania in particular, has the potential to be that. Right now, I feel like AEW's potential lies in more of a weekly episodic experience, not quite as visceral, building up to matches that I aesthetically I can't wait to see because I appreciate the art form. The difference between maybe watching the NBA Finals when it's LeBron versus the Warriors versus you being a Lakers fan and me being a Magic fan, watching an NBA Finals that features your favorite team having a chance to win the championship. Sort of just a difference in emotional resonance. One more appreciative, the other more visceral. So, you know, using that basketball analogy, I mean, the concept of the WrestleMania era, the Book of Sports Entertainment, to rank the greatest wrestlers in the WrestleMania era, I mean, it was basically just borrowing from the concept that Bill Simmons did so well in the Book of Basketball. You and I, since we began talking on podcasts, have had a tendency to veer our conversations into basketball-related parallels, whether that be earlier this year when we were talking about the so-termed wrestler empowerment movement that led to the creation of AEW, paralleling what we've seen in the NBA with guys like Durant leaving a great rival in the Western Conference of the Warriors to join the Warriors in an era that only in that era could such a thing have happened. But also an example of this guy's going to go play aesthetically pleasing basketball and make a ton of money doing it rather than stay the course and grind out and be his generation's, you know, Charles Barkley or whatever, you know. So you and I have always talked a lot about basketball, and you brought something really interesting to the table that when we started our discourse about legacy in our Facebook chat to prepare for this podcast, you brought up the idea of looking at guys like franchise players. You know, can you win a championship with Anthony Davis as the best player on your team? If your second best player on your team is Kyrie Irving, you've got a real shot to be a champion. Looking at it that way, let's start our transition into talking about that with some of the wrestlers in question. I think in the modern era, certainly I'd be happy to go back and look at it in past eras too, if you're so interested and are so willing.
Sure.
Because, you know, I'm looking at it right now, and I'm seeing this thing that popped out at me when Bill Simmons started his Book of Basketball 2.0 podcast, which I assume you've been listening to religiously like I have.
Every one
of them as well. Every single one of them. I love it. That stuff, again, it's like candy to me. So this time, basically, he's having conversations like Rich and I are having about basketball and how it's changed since he wrote it in 2010. And so here we are now, and we've got this very interesting thing that's hitting me like a ton of bricks when it comes to pro wrestler legacy. What would you consider to be the equivalent of winning a championship in the NBA for WWE or for pro wrestlers?
I would say being an undisputed number one star, having that crazy energy around you, whether it's for a short or a long period of time, preferably a long period of time if it's a number one person. For example, like a John Cena is an obvious number one winning a championship with your best player. He's a proven ratings draw. He's a proven merch seller. He's a proven big match performer. You know, he just has every base covered, essentially.
All right.
And then, yeah.
I'm glad you said it that way, and that's a perfect example of why you and I have gotten along so well over the years, because that's the exact same thing that I came up with. And so, if you may recall that, you know, the WrestleMania era book, I weighted everything equally. I weighted matches, championships, headlining situations, basic wrestler characteristics, your skill level, and last but not least, your drawing power. I weighted all of those things equally. But that was one of the things that stuck out to me that if I was rewriting that book today, would have to be for entry into the top 10. You'd have to be the undisputed number one guy. You know? Now, question for you. What does that mean for someone like Daniel Bryan, who was undisputedly the number one reason why a WrestleMania main event was what it was? The pinnacle spot, the pinnacle achievement, the pinnacle sort of creative you know, I think a lot of people would feel like one of the pinnacle creative moments, however you feel like they got there, they still got there, and it worked incredibly well. You know, all of those things taken into consideration, I still don't think that's someone you consider in that spot for number one undisputed top guy, right? I mean, that's...
I don't think you can. I remember the Lords of Pain draft last year. I did draft him with my first round pick, but that was like a function of kind of like where everything kind of landed out, but and the rank, the draft position I had. But I look at Daniel Bryan like he could have been that. Maybe he's Bill Walton. Maybe we, you know, never know. Like maybe Bill Walton dominates the rest of the 70s if his knees and feet don't go to hell on him. If Daniel Bryan doesn't, you know, get medically sidelined for the rest of the decade. Maybe he, you know, still dominates in that same fashion. But I think if you do have a Daniel Bryan, if you have that, I think the argument is, well, do you take that one, you know, plus whatever he's given you? Like, what does that qualify him for? I think that's a quality, like, second, you know, banana type person.
Agreed. So I want to throw another name at you. I mean, you talked about John Cena. He's an obvious choice in this conversation. How much do you think it matters that era in which they were an undisputed number one person in the company, how much do you think it matters whether or not that era was considered successful? For instance, number one guy that comes to mind in this conversation, Bret the Hitman Hart. Hard to dispute him when you look back at the new generation that he was the new generation's number one star. Even if they tried to go away from him, history still shows he's like I've always compared him to Tim Duncan. Like it or not,
mm-hmm.
Tim Duncan was the undisputed number one star of the 2010s, in my opinion. Now that said, or not the 2010s, the 2000s. So that said, what about Bret Hart? Do you think that dynamic matters?
So, I'm much like Samuel Plan. I'm a huge new generation guy. So, this is going to be kind of difficult for me because I think Bret Hart, when you talk about everything but the drawing ability, I think he's, you know, he could have adapted to. I think he's... He would have done fine as a wrestler in this era. He would have been great, I think. He would have adapted to, you know, maybe even being on the top rope a little more. His technical acumen was, you know, off the charts.
He'd also
of course,
like
he had
a
the
giant.
Look. Yeah, yeah. He. I think he would be awesome. I think he's like a low tier, like number one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's
no,
in the top
if I
10.
Could say
he's number nine.
Yeah, I would go like. You know, if we had to go a high one, mid one, low one, I think I'll go with a low one for Bret Hart.
Okay. And I think that's fair. I think he's still very much in the conversation. But you know what that means? That means there's not many people who are.
Yeah.
That means there's not many people who are. So to you, just running through your list, who would you say, going back to the beginning of the WrestleMania era, really belongs in that conversation? When you add up to present day, because I'm curious on a couple of fronts. Number one is who do you think belongs in that conversation of undisputed number one guys? And then number two, I'm curious to know how you contextualize the last 4 or 5 years in that realm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you would have to, you know, say we go back to WrestleMania 1, then you got to talk about Hogan, obviously, you know, you have to talk about Macho Man. You also have to talk about Ric Flair. You talk about Bret, Shawn, Austin, Jericho, Undertaker, Triple H. Triple H is a weird one. The Rock, did I say The Rock?
Not say The Rock, but The Rock, of course, yeah.
Obviously The Rock. and then other number one guys, like I would look at like Hiroshi Tanahashi, you know, Okada. Not sure about Kenny yet.
I think Kenny's got some work to do, personally.
Yeah, I think he has, like, I think the big argument for Kenny is like no one's ever made themselves a drawing star in America being primarily in Japan as a foreigner. I don't think that's ever happened.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then, you know, he'll answer the questions about being a number one now for the rest of his career, I feel like. So, who else would be a number one guy?
So be talking about now we're into, for WWE, you're into the mid-2000s, the John Cena kind of
John
space.
Cena. I think Batista's arguable, I want to say. Like, I think he's on that low one. I would put Batista and Bret Hart kind of, you know, on the same level there. I don't know about an Edge. I know you're a big Edge guy. I'm not sure about Edge. Maybe he's a solid number two guy, along with like a Daniel Bryan, and then it's where you get those Shield guys, and it's like I don't know if they're one or a two. I think if they're the third best player on the team, maybe you can like do that, but I don't feel either any of them as a one or two right now. And maybe that's not, you know, and they've got a lot to, well, I can't even say that because they've had like a lot of, you know, career to do it. It's just a function of the WWE not allowing them to get to, you know, to break through to that point. Like they've still never found the right thing for Roman Reigns. Like it's always, Brock has always been his mountain, but it's never clicked ever. Like,
yeah, I mean, isn't Brock really the number one guy right now? I mean, it'd
yeah,
be hard to argue with.
Begrudging,
I mean, they
yeah,
position him that way. Yeah. He's been yeah. the champion for the better part of. I mean, he's been the champion for how long? For it's been over
yeah.
most of
the
3 years.
The better part of like going back to since 2014 SummerSlam, he's had a belt on him
the vast
more often than not for the last 5 years. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll steer back to the present time here in a moment, but there's some names on there that. This is what stood out to me. And, you know, I guess this is a byproduct of having taken such a big step back from WWE that the way that I'm thinking about it's different than I used to. But I let Undertaker get in as high as the top five, you know? And I did that largely because of the longevity of his career. But would we really, if you and I sat down and broke it down, would we really ever say he was the undisputed top guy? I mean, I wouldn't even put him on Batista's level in that way. Like Batista was way more consistently the number one guy in WWE in my mind, as ludicrous as someone might initially think that being said would be.
I think Undertaker's just a very expensive luxury that you have. Like, you support each and every one of those other guys with someone like an Undertaker, I feel like.
Who is he in basketball?
Undertaker. If you look at... It's funny, you said Tim Duncan, which is... which I would kind of think Undertaker and Tim Duncan might have something in common there.
I can
but
see that.
That
makes a lot of sense, actually.
You know, they both wear black. They're 7 foot tall, damn near. They're kind of boring sometimes, but, you know, in Texas, you know, there's
I like
a lot
that
of things.
Quite well.
Yeah. So,
okay. So let me ask you this point blank. There's
yeah,
two guys.
Strange.
Two guys are in my top 10 right now that as much as I love one and respect the other, two of my top 10 seem like they don't belong anymore because I mean, how long do you need to be that top guy? Because with Shawn, how much Shawn Michaels are we talking about as the undisputed number one guy?
Right.
You know? Because we're not talking about a period where he was in that conversation for 5 years like Bret Hart. We're talking about 96. We're talking about the lead up to WrestleMania 14. The better part of 1997, he's not the top guy, you know.
Right.
Bret Hart's taking that spot back.
In a funny conversation I think I had with James once, right? How Shawn Michaels imagine if like we had New Japan World, or excuse me, like All Japan World in the 90s. And you know how great Shawn Michaels, you know, was revered for all those title matches that had on pay-per-view and all that. But at the same time, other stuff's happening in the world too that we just hadn't seen, like Misawa's happening, Kenta Kobashi's happening, and you know, all throughout the 90s, the three pillars of New Japan, you know, I want to say it's Chono, Shinya Hashimoto, and there's one other guy I'm forgetting. Forgive me. Someone's going to yell at their podcast. I'm forgetting the other guy. But like all those guys, like, you know, if you look at someone like Seth Rollins as compared to like Okada, Tanahashi, like all that stuff is there. Like, it makes me think maybe Shawn Michaels is, you know, there's room to look at him as overrated, I think. I'm not ever going to say Shawn Michaels is overrated, but I think, you know, if someone wanted to apply today's, you know, what we look at as, you know, great and modern in-ring performance, and literally transport it back to what it was then, you know, I could see people being like, Shawn Michaels, he ain't no Misawa, like something like that. Like, and gotcha. I don't know. And, you know, him being number one, he is hard with Shawn Michaels because he was on top of an even worse time than Bret.
Yeah.
And then when he came back, like I don't know if he never wanted to do it, anything like that. He's almost like The Undertaker too. He's another expensive luxury. I think if you have Shawn Michaels as maybe a number two, a high number two maybe.
And I think that's a fascinating piece of this puzzle. And because now you brought up some other names. You know, Chris Jericho is one. In WWE, Chris Jericho was never the undisputed number one guy, even though he was undisputed champion, is the argument that I would make. You know, that was a vehicle, and it was a wonderful vehicle, and his legacy's not the same without it. But Chris Jericho won the Undisputed Championship to help make Chris Jericho, not because Chris Jericho was the undisputed number one guy who should have had that spot. Would you agree with that?
So, it's funny. Jericho, he spent 20 years in WWE. I don't consider him a WWE guy. I consider him to be Chris Jericho. WWE is a place he worked. And he could have been that guy, the number one guy. But I think you have to start looking at, you know, what was it a proper way to portray him? You know, cleaning up the world champion, cleaning up Stephanie McMahon's dog poop, because I'd argue that'd weaken anybody.
Yeah.
And he clearly had the chops on the mic, had the chops in the ring. He had an enemy in Triple H, which probably didn't help him. And look, for me, as I mentioned, WWE is a place Jericho worked because he worked in Mexico, worked in Japan, worked in WCW, and every place Chris Jericho has been, New Japan, modern-wise, now AEW, I think he's unquestionably a number one at this point. Gotcha. Like, if you just look at the body of work, like, I think he's possibly had the most unique career we've, like, possibly seen since, like, a Terry Funk or something like that, like, as far as, like, being all these different places, wrestling all these different opponents, being on top, being a champion, being of the era that he's in. Because the great thing about Chris Jericho is that he's never washed up, because he's always new. He's doing something new. And it's like, he's just consistently put out stuff. He's, you know, taking time off to do, you know, music and stuff, but he's maintained a consistent enough wrestling profile. I think he's easily a number one, easily out of Shawn Michaels' shadow. I think I will take Chris Jericho over Shawn Michaels. I know James is furious that I said that on this show right now, but that's right. Chris Jericho, I'll take him over The Undertaker. I'll take him over a lot of people. When you start looking at his career, he never gets injured, never breaks down, always coming up with new stuff, always getting over, multiple countries, multiple companies, multiple eras. This guy, like, he has a career like no other.
Oh, man. That's a brilliant piece of dialogue right there. I'll tell you what, man. I think that that's a very convincing argument. But let me ask you this. Does the fact that no one is ever going to think of Chris Jericho like they think about Macho Man mean that Macho Man deserves a place higher than Chris Jericho because of that, or does Chris Jericho's total body of work now put him in a class that, because that's honestly, in the book, I did not make that as emphasized as I now think I should. The fact that Macho Man is one of these guys who, he's just an indelible part of pro wrestling lore. No one can ever replace what he accomplished. And the time frame that accomplished, you know, it's...
And it's a time and place with Macho Man, too, a lot. He was in the perfect time for it to be as big as wrestling ever was at one point, right? He's linked to the Hulkamania era. He's the B-side to Hulk Hogan, essentially. So you're that huge. Jericho's never going to be that. You know, in the eyes of, you know, Joe Blow walking down the street, I hold up a picture of Chris Jericho and I hold up a picture of Macho Man. Obviously, they're going to know who the Macho Man is. But when we lay those resumes down on paper, it'd be hard for the Macho Man to stand up to Chris Jericho.
And that's an interesting place for us to be. And before we move on from Jericho, I want to give him his due, and I actually want to ask you a hypothetical question. This is a big what if. You go to the, you know, the segment that they do in the recent Pyramid podcast on the Book of Basketball 2.0? And for reference, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, basically there's a lot of categories. If you've never listened to a Bill Simmons podcast and you like this one, then you probably enjoy it. I mean, the way he breaks things down, particularly when he gets into history mode, is about as interesting to me as there is of anything to listen to. But anyway, you know the segment where they do the right time. Let's see, what is it? It's right time.
Age the worst. What aged the worst? What held up the best and worst?
Speaking of that particular one, right time, wrong time. What's that segment? Wrong time, right time, out of time, something like that.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Chris Jericho in his prime in 2002 through 12 was unleashed now? I don't think there's any doubt he'd be the number one guy in the company. And it wouldn't be close because he's got everything that they should be looking for in a top guy right now. They should be looking for a young Chris Jericho. That's what they should be looking for.
Yeah.
Someone who's got the diverse moveset.
Can you talk?
Can talk. He's one of the best talkers of all time. He's got the outside chops that hooks him up into all this different stuff outside the world of wrestling. He's the perfect star. He's just too damn old. I mean, and he's still great. Don't get me wrong. He's still great. And I love what legacy building he's doing right now. But at the end of the day, the guy's still 50 years old. I really wish he was 35.
Yeah, I don't know how, like, Chris Jericho could fall off a cliff tomorrow, right? Because I remember being in thinking about the beginning of 2016 when he didn't realize that he couldn't wrestle the same way yet. But what he did was become even better on the mic. And then eventually when he got out of WWE and went to New Japan, he was like, I wrestle the better wrestlers and, you know, in an unleashed kind of style, and I bring like what I know mentally, because like mentally I'm not any worse. Like maybe physically I am, but I can think my way through these matches and produce great stuff. And you know, I would argue everything that he's done, you know, since Wrestle Kingdom 12, like a lot of those are going to be looked at as some of his most fond matches. You know, because unfortunately, being in WWE, the way time moves in WWE now, like, it's no one's business. It's really hard to remember what people have done because there's so much content, there's so much everything in WWE that your resumes are just going to start like, oh, okay, like, shit, I didn't remember that. I didn't remember that random match that he had at Payback in 2013 against CM Punk. Oh, that match was great, too. But it's like, you know, I think he's proving this has been the – another Bill Simmons one for you. This has been FU mode from Chris Jericho from the second that they gave him the second match at WrestleMania 33. Like, oh, really? I'm going to show you. I should have been the number one guy. Like, you got Triple H running this company. He was always my rival. I was always better than him. I'm going to show you across the world, and I'm going to be the thorn. You know, I love Jericho. If you guys can't tell, I love Chris Jericho. Like,
so, hey, the guy, he deserves this conversation. He does.
Yeah. I think he's unquestionably a number one, and you look at his career, it's like they didn't get as much out of him as they should have.
Doc says.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the Mania Era is bringing terror on radio. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast. Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania